Today's daf in Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed He. So, let's just remember what's going on over here. We are in the middle of a very special thing that the Gemara is doing. The Gemara is trying to interrelate all of the various dinim of Shabbos, and even beyond, all of the various dinim of how the Torah treats various halachas in terms of chazakah and in terms of safek, and the other Isurim of Shabbos besides Hotzah. We want to see how those issues all relate to Erevin. So we utilize the Erev, and we're about to enter into a period of the year where the concern for the Rabbanan of the issues of Hotzah is most evident, more than any other time of the year. And that's when we cancel Tkiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Now, that particular understanding of the nature of the takonas de Rabbanan, which originally, remember, the very first takona, the very first time we find that even Avram Avinu was involved in the Mishmeres of Torah, had to do with Erevin specifically. And Shlomo HaMelech's initial concern was the concern for Erevin. Shabbos, the entire Masechet, was almost entirely concerned with the nature of Hotzah. Now that we've seen from our Masechet means that there is a fundamental relationship between the way that we deal with takonas de Rabbanan and how it is that we view the kayach of the Rabbanan and how it is that we view the Torah and the interrelationship of the information in the Torah and the way that the Rabbanan darsh in the Torah as being bound up deeply into this initial extension of the concepts of Torah as absolutes and the extension of Torah in Mishmor, Lishmor et Mishmarti, as we find in Avram Avinu. And therefore, the very kayach of the Shmira, to actually be Mevater on Tkiyah Shofar, outside of Bezdin and outside of the Beis HaMikdash, because it's Shabbos and this weird takona that maybe somebody's going to end up carrying a shofar, is itself one of the most powerful expressions of the relationship of the takonas de Rabbanan, Hotzah, and Erevin, to the very essence of Briyas Adam, which is Rosh Hashanah, the nature of Din, Mishpat, and so on. Because of that, it's not to be so surprising that we would choose specifically the Inyanim of Erevin to describe the overall nature of Shabbos, which is what we've been doing in looking at the various Isurim that you might be over on Shabbos, the Takonas de Rabbanan about climbing up a tree, and the fact that the Rabbanan would hold that that would possibly Erev. And furthermore, that we would use Erevin as sort of a key to understanding the way that the various Gezeiros Drabbanan and modes of Paskening Drabbanan based on Chazak and so on, issues from Kol HaTorah Kula suddenly come to some type of consummate head when we end up with Erevin. And because of that, we have a lot of complex and different types of sugyas that we have to deal with in these very short, maybe spaces of dapim, that maybe they have a lot of tosin on them, so they look very short. But lemaisa, the ideas are complex. So we started yesterday by talking about a case in the Mishnah where you lost a key to a closet. Now there's a different question over here besides the simple one. The simple one, again, doesn't seem to have anything to do with Erevin, was the question of whether there's an iser over here of stira on a closet. That's the first way we learned. We're going to see there's many options. On a closet that was made out of bricks that are not cemented together, and you're going to take them apart. And according to the Tanakhama, therefore, the Erev is, again, theoretically accessible. We introduced a new halacha, also according to Rabbi Eliezer, that if the key is where you put it, it's not that the key is lost. What you did was lose your mind, not the key, and therefore you can't remember where it is that you put that key. Now, even though we're talking about an actual functional inaccessibility during the period of Bein Hashmashos, and up until now, we viewed the idea of inaccessibility as being a sort of binary question, yes or no. Either I can get to it Bein Hashmashos or I can't get to it Bein Hashmashos. Let us understand that getting to something Bein Hashmashos is not the underlying issue of the Erev. In other words, if I know that Bein Hashmashos, I will be able to get to my Erev on Shabbos, I don't need to be able to get to it Bein HaShemashes, right? Bein HaShemashes is a model for the moment that the Erev is Chal. But it doesn't mean that it absolutely has to fit all of the criterion at that time Bein HaShemashes. Obviously, if I know that I have an Erev later, so what's the difference whether at this particular moment I'll be able to get to it? Because of that, we now, this is the first time we've understood that. We thought it was a question of either you and the Erev is in the same Rishos, you have act, which is defined by either the question of how we explain a Rishos, or by accessibility. Now, actually, because Reb Eliezer says over here, well, I mean, you don't actually need to have the key. People misplace their car keys all the time. So now when they're asking, oh, yeah, yeah, where's my key? Where's my key? A normal person says, calm down. Don't think about it. And when you need the key in another hour or two, you'll find the key. You'll remember. And that's normally the way. So Reb Eliezer says, that's exactly the case over here. You don't need to have the key now. As long as the key isn't lost, I mean, it depends what you mean by Avad Mafteach. If what you're talking about Avad Mafteach is you've misplaced the Mafteach, that's not a problem. Why not? I can't get to my Erev. Why do you need to get to your Erev? Will you be able to get to your Erev on Shabbos when you find the key? So that's fine. Now the question would also, that same question would involve the issue of what if we ultimately find the key on Shabbos? And then would I apply the criterion of whether that key, had it been found before Shabbos, would have been accessible Bein HaShemashes? Would it have to be accessible on Shabbos? Okay, now that's a different question. In other words, I don't know where the key is. Actually, it's not that I forgot where I put it. I dropped it somewhere. Okay, that turns out that I dropped it in Rishus HaRabim. So then that meant that there would be no way for me to get to my Erev on Shabbos. If I dropped it somehow in a place where I would be able to get it to the Erev, so then it would mean that I know now that the Erev, even though I couldn't get to it Bein HaShemashes, would have been accessible on Shabbos, and therefore would be kosher even in that case, as we're going to see, all this Alib Reb Eliezer. So this expands the idea of accessibility, while meanwhile involving us in all these complexities about whether something is mukta, are you allowed to move it according to Rebbe or according to Rabbanan during the Bein HaShemashes? If something isn't accessible, Bein HaShemashes will be accessible later. Will I be allowed to? Is there a din of Binyan Bekelim or Shvira Bekelim? Can I and must I learn that the Mishnah, which is the way we were learning it up until now, up until this morning, we understood the Mishnah to be talking about specifically a closet that was made out of bricks, and the machlokas was between the Tanakama, who was Rebbe Meir, that Alibi to Rebbe Meir, you're allowed to take apart bricks in a college dorm that were just put on top, one on top of the other with a piece of wood to create your bookcase. So according to him, you'd be able to move those bricks. And that would be the machlokas. And Reb Eliezer would say, no, you can't do that. That's how we understood it, Bepashtas. And because of that, we got to the differences also between the Shita of Reb Eliezer that is mentioned in the Braita. And the Shita of Reb Eliezer mentioned the Braita, with which we concluded yesterday, is that it depends where ultimately if it was really lost, where ultimately the keys show up. Now, the reason that we got to that Braita is because we did not want to say that we were going Aliba the Rabbana. If we were going, Aliba the Rebbe, if we were going Aliba the Rebbe, okay, it interrupts me. If we were going Aliba the Rebbe, so then remember that Rebbe holds, even if something is Osir, but it's only Osir bid Rabbanan, the Erev would be okay, in which case, even if I hold, I'm not allowed to take apart this closet on Shabbos. And remember that Rebbe Meir only said you could take apart this closet of loose bricks on Yontif. And on Yontif, we were matir it because on Yontif, we're matir a lot of things to get to food, and we weren't machmer, but not on Shabbos. Now, obviously, one simple answer to that, as Tosus points out, is the Gemara could simply have said, we're going Aliba the Rebbe. But there's two problems with saying that. Because, first of all, a moment ago, we had defined the previous Mishnah as going according to the Rabbanan, and the first part of the Mishnah before that previous Mishnah, which is the penultimate Mishnah, we said was going Aliba to Rebbe. So now what are we going to do? We're going to go Rebbe, Rabbanan, Rebbe. I mean, that's very difficult to say. Another problem with saying that is that it would therefore have implied that the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Tanakama in our Mishnah is the machlokas between Rabbi and the Rabbanan, which that definitely we don't want to do, to have another Mishnah that's paralleling a well-known machlokas in general about the dinim of Shabbos. So Tosis gives both of those tirutz. But in any event, because of either of those problems or both of those problems, the Gemara had to limit the discussion in the Mishnah to Yontif. And it was talking about the question of an Erev on Yontif, and that's why Rabbi Meir was saying it was okay. But Einachinami, when it came to Shabbos, he wouldn't have said it. Again, we know in our minds that if we go on Libet Rebbe, then obviously we could have said it on Shabbos as well. Okay. But then that led us to a problem in the Braita. The Braita discusses the difference between finding the Mafteach in a field, which is a Rishus HaRabim, as we'll see, it's talking about not a Carmelist field, a Rishus HaRabim, and finding it in the city. And over there, Rebbe Eliezer said, and this is an extension of his idea, if it turns out, I don't need to have access to it, Ben Hashmashas, right? If it turns out on Shabbos that you're going to be able to get to your Erev, so then, obviously, ex post facto, now I know that I had an Erev. I need for the Erev to be there, and when I don't need the Erev, I need the Erev when I need to be at the Erev. Good. So I get my Erev on Shabbos. Now I'm able to walk outside of the Trum. So he says over there that it depends. If the key was found in a Rishus HaRabim, so then you won't be able to get to the Erev on Shabbos. If the key was found in the city, in, let's say, somebody's courtyard or on a roof or whatever, then you would be able to get to the Erev. Why? Because Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon, you will recall, says, Chatzeros, Karfefos, Gagais, Mavos, they're all considered to be one Rishus. Meaning, every type of Rishus, which is distinguished by its use, as opposed to its diurim, all of these Rishus are not meant for diurim. So any type of Rishus that is not meant for diurim is considered to be one Rishus in terms of objects in the Rishus. So therefore, if the key was found on somebody's roof, I can move that through the roofs and the chatzeros and the karfefos until I'm able to get it to my Erev. And therefore, there's some way in a city that I'm going to be able to get that Erev there. But obviously, that kind of statement could only be made on Shabbos. On Yontif, I can carry anyway, so what's the difference? So that led us yesterday to recognize, look, that there's two different issues. Part of the question over here is about an Erev on Yontif. And then there's a Bamed Dvorim Amurim and a Chusur Chasra, which is talking about, and what about on Shabbos? And over there, Rabbi Eliezer says, well, if it's on Shabbos and I find it in the city, then I hold of Rabbi Shimon. Now, that he only said in the Braita. He did not say that in the Mishnah at all. In the Mishnah, all that he said was that it was the question, if I know where it is and only if I know where it is. So it's possible that Rebbe Eliezer in the Mishnah actually is a different sheet than Rebbe Eliezer doesn't hold of Rebbe Shimon. In which case, we would have three different issues. Do I hold of Rebbe Shimon in terms of carrying it on Shabbos? Do I hold that I'm allowed to break it? And do I hold that the assumption that things end up turning up, if I just forget where I put it, would be considered to be a perfectly kosher Erev. Okay, this is where we were holding yesterday in this rather complex interaction. Now, today, the Gemara wants to tell us that we definitely do not need to stick to this idea that we're talking about a brick closet, which is a little bit strange anyway to say we're talking about a brick closet. And therefore, we now got up to Rabba Verav Yosef, the Amri Tarvayu. Why a brick closet? It's a regular closet. It's a wood closet. So what's the machlokas? Machlokas is something entirely different. Is a closet considered to be a kli, or is a closet considered to be a binyan? If a closet is considered to be a kli, and that would mean that it's a kli, even though mitzad the dinim of tuma, it's not a kli, because it's so big, remember, as we learned in Kalim, that it holds arboim so belach, which is the kuraim biyavesh, barnea, chaim. So it's possible, Rashi learns, maybe the Tanakhama doesn't hold of that din that Arboim Sabi Yavesh that those shiurim mean that something is not going to be Makabal Tuma. Okay, that's how Rashi learns. The Tosfos HaRosh says over here that no, that's not the point. The point over here is legabe, the question of what's inside the closet. The closet per se is certainly not going to be mekabel tumah because it lost its ability to be mekabel tumah bichlal. But if something is a building, then the building is not going to be able to give tumah over to something inside of it. But if the something that's not mekabel tumah is not mekabel tumah because it's a kli that is too large, so then the things inside of it will become tumah. Why not? They were all moved by a zov. Let's talk about a case where a zov moved it, which is what we're going to talk about. And therefore, you don't have to say what Rashi is saying, that we're arguing on that basic din. Fine. Again, that's a tangential issue, but I'm sure because of our involvement in Kalim, it would be very much on your mind. So if you hold that we're talking about a kli, so if a closet made of wood is essential, as long as it's not nailed to the wall and it's not part of a building, it's a kli. Okay, so then we hold ein binyan bekelim, and if there's no binyan bekelim, there's no stira bekelim. And again, whether there's an issur derabbanan or not, maybe that would be dependent in the machlokas of Rebbe and the Rabbanan. As to why, I'm so sorry for needing to do this to you, because the Gemara is doing it to us. The Gemara is making exceedingly complex interrelated sugyas, which we need to keep our heads on our shoulders for. And I don't want you like going through this, but why is that an issue? Why didn't we just simply say there's a machlokas, as we know, whether yesh binyan bekelim or ain binyan bekelim? Why not say that that's the machlokas here? And that's a simple explanation of the Mishnah. So again, the reason we don't want to say that is because that's a machlokas by Shammai and Beit Hillel. We don't want a machlokas in the Mishnah to force one of the shittas to be going like Beit Shammai. So because of that, we didn't want to say it, says Tosfos. Okay. In any event, if it's a kli, which is what the Tanakhama holds, you could break the kli. Mashenken Reb Eliezer says, no. The only option is that the key was not really lost. It was just misplaced. Okay, so then according to him, I can't break the closet because a closet is considered to be an actual oil, which means that it's a building. Is there such a machlokas? Yes, there's actually such a machlokas. At least Rab and Rav Yosef claim there's such a machlokas. What's the machlokas? The machlokas is the machlokas that we find in the Mishnah of Zovim. You see how incredibly rich all of the shittas and issues are in which they involve just about every single seder in Shas, okay? So the question over here of a zov who knocks on the door of a closet. So if the zov is knocking on the door of the closet moves a little bit. So then it should be betame beheset. Remember that if a zov moves something that's the opposite of the standard Nose, over here, the Zav is essentially an extension of the idea. He is being Nose something else. That's called Tumat Heset. Unique to the Dinim of Zav, there is a Tuma over there too. So that means that the Shida Teva Umigdal would become Tameh. And Rabbi Nechemi and Rabbi Shimon says, no, they don't come Tameh. Ah! So there you have a basis, Tainas Rabbah, you have a basis for what I'm claiming, that there's a machlokas about whether a closet is a Kli or whether a closet is not a Kli. So apparently the Tanakhama holds, my labaka miflaga, Tanakhama holds it's a kli, and Rabbi Nechemi and Rabbi Shimon hold that it's no, it's actually considered to be a binyan, it's an oihel, and because of that, it's not going to be makabal tumah, binyanim are not makabal tumah. So you see that there is such a machlokas. Once I understand that there's such a machlokas, gabi zavim, I can apply that machlokas over here. Taina zabaya, that doesn't make any sense, because after all, it says in a braita very clearly, don't give any artificial explanations about terminology. I don't care whether something is an ohel or whether you call it a kli, okay? The bottom line is, if the zav knocks on the door of something that's called an ohel and it actually moves, so then it's tameh. Again, question whether it's tameh, the contents is tameh, fine. Tosfos HaRosh, Rashi, many other Rishonim are involved in that discussion as well. If a zav knocks on a kli and it doesn't move, so then it's tahar. That's the only thing that you need to take into consideration. And not only that, but in the end of the Mishnah itself, the one about the zov knocking on the door, it says beferish, ve'ima yuni sotin, if they're moved by the zov, then even Rabbi Nechemiah and Rabbi Shimon agree that they're tameh. So what are you talking about, Rabbi? You're bringing a raya from this Mishnah that there's a machlokes tanoim about whether a closet is considered to be a kli or not. And it ends with Zeklal. If it's nisat machmat kocho, if basically what it is that the Zov did was move something by the direct application of energy from himself, he touched it with his hand, moved it with his hand, it's tummy. If it's a secondary movement that is set up by resonance that the Zov causes, so let's say the Zov does one of those Zulu dances, you know, where you're banging on the ground and the whole thing is shaking, and now the closet is shaking and so on, that is not considered to be hesed. It's got to be direct and not indirect vibrations. Okay. So therefore, Abaye says, you could throw out Rabba and Rav Yosef because they have nothing to do with what we're talking about over here. This mission has nothing to do with questions about whether a closet is a kli or not. I say there's a very simple issue over here. Everybody, of course, agrees that the only question over here is hesed machmat kocho is tamei for sure. And hesed because of vibrations is tahar. The question over here is where the Zov did actually move it. He didn't move it. I'm sorry. He was knocking on it with his hand. The knocking set up now the resonance in the closet, which causes things to move, or possibly the closet to move. Again, that's dependent in that machlokas. And over there, the machlokas is whether, if he directly applied energy to the closet, is that considered to be movement? In other words, is vibration movement if it's directly caused? Or is that not what is caused by the Torah called hesed? That's the machlokas over there. So therefore, forget about that Mishnah. It has nothing to do with Rabbi and Rav Yosef. Okay, so therefore, how do I understand our Mishnah if we want to talk about a closet, if we want to talk about a closet of wood? I would say that there is a way to explain it as a closet of wood. Nothing to do with what they were talking about, Rabbi and Rav Yosef. Rava joins me in saying that the idea would be like this. We're talking about a closet that's closed with a bicycle lock. And that bicycle lock does not have, it doesn't have a chain. It has like a rope, a thick rope around it, a cable. So if I'm going to cut through the cable, then I can get into the closet. Forget about the key. I lost the key. So boisakina lamifsake. So now I need a knife to cut through the cable. Now, there's no iser really in cutting through the cable because, again, either because I need the contents is food, you're allowed to open a box on Shabbos and so on, or because it's mekalkel, and therefore there's no problem because of mekalkel, perhaps we'd be going like Rebbe. Again, you'd have to combine all of the previous inyonim. The issue of here is a whole new problem. Am I allowed to pick up a knife to cut through the bicycle lock, the chain? What's that have to do with? That has to do with muktzah. Remember? It's yet another sugya. Remember the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi about how we end up holding by muktzah and Rabbi Nechemiah? So over there, the question was, the Tanakama holds like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi holds, you're allowed to move muktzah. This is how we paskin, right? Essentially. You're allowed to move muktzah on Shabbos. The only thing that you can't move under any purposes is if it's muktzah machres chisor and kis. So if it's a yatet shemachres shah, or it's a masar gadol in a lumber yard or whatever, that's something you wouldn't want to use for any other purpose other than the one it's designed for. And because that's muktzah machres chisor and kis, that we're made it to. But other than that, you can move it. So fine. You want to pick up a pliers and cut through it? Go right ahead. So you can take your normal kli, and you're using it for heter, so why not? Whereas Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Nechemiah, which was the extreme position on how much of the original takana of muktzah, which remember meant you couldn't move anything, basically, like Rabbi Nechemiah. So this is the sugya in which Rabbi Nechemiah holds the original takana of muktzah is mostly still in effect. And because of that, you can't even move your talis for something. Unless it's you're wearing the talis. Well, but I need the talis as a pot holder to hold a hot pot. You can't move a talis to be a pot holder. You can't move a spoon, which was meant for your soup, to use that spoon in order to open up the top of a coffee thing. You can't move anything except for what it needs to, what it was made to be. So if Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Nechemya, who holds even a talus and even a spoon can't be moved, so there's no way to cut through the bicycle lock. That's all. In which case, we have a totally different approach to the Mishnah. So again, what Rabbi has managed to do is given us a Mishnah which has a most incredible variety of possible interpretations, and all of which could be valid in terms of the way that we construct the case. Just again, a object lesson in the breadth of possibilities which are expressed in the idea of the possibility of reaching your Erev and not its actuality. So we have superpositioned Mishnayos. And that allows us to continue with our wonderful Capitan's words of So now we get to something that we mentioned briefly before. Thank you, Capitan. And that was non-accessibility that is iffy. It's sort of accessible, but not quite accessible. So let's talk about these cases. The Erev rolled outside of the Tchum. Remember, Rava's comment on this was, yeah, but that's only if it's 4 amas out of the Tchum, where we came up with the whole idea of the being using your personal space as an extension and being able to be mamale the way we would be a city. This was where Rava had made that comment. So the Erev goes and rolls out of the Tchum. This means outside, let's say, of the 4 amas. And you're sitting over there longingly looking at your Erev, and you're thinking, oh my God, if only maybe the wind would push it back in this direction instead of rolling it out in that direction, is that accessible or not? Or a pile of rocks falls on it. Pile of rocks falls on it. Could I still get to it? Can I move the rocks? Do I hold like Rebbe that it's only a problem of Muksa? Are we talking about big, heavy rocks for which I would have to bring a bulldozer? All to be discussed. So if rocks fell on it, and again, you're very frustrated, right there beneath your feet is your Erev. Oh my gosh. So is it a kosher Erev or not? Or how about if the Erev burned up? Or it was perfectly good when I made it, it was truma, but then it became tummy. So again, it depends. If these things happen before Bein HaShemashos, so then it's no good. You don't have an Erev. But if it happened after Bein HaShemashos, that's okay. Because again, the din is the Erev is defined by its status at Bein HaShemashos. But how about if it's a suffix? I don't know whether it happened before or happened after. So Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Omri, ooh boy, is you in big trouble. Why? Because now you don't know where your tum is. If the Erev was a kosher Erev, your Tchum extended 2,000 amas in the direction of the Erev. But let's imagine a case in which you put the Erev at the very edge of your Tchum to allow Richie to go all the way out 2,000 amas beyond his 2,000 amas. What happens to the east? What happens to the west? You can't move an inch to the west. But if it wasn't an Erev, then you have no more rights to move east. And you only have rights to move west. What do you do when it might be an Erev and it might not be an Erev? You sit exactly where you are. That's what you do because you can't move in either direction. So we call that a chamar gamal because are you driving from behind or are you driving from the front and pulling? So these are two very different ways in which a person that drives a camel and a donkey has got to put himself between the two of them, right? Because, I mean, the camel's behind him. He's leading it like it would any animal. And the donkey, he keeps banging on to move ahead and so on, because that's the way you drive a donkey. So that's exactly what this guy is, except he ain't driving. He's sitting there between the east camel and the west donkey. So we call that a chamar gamal. Very cute. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim. Well, I mean, it's a suffix, and a suffix is kosher, isn't it? I mean, like, is that a regular suffix drabbanan kind of thing? We'll see what they're arguing about. Omer Rabbi Yossi, I can tell you that Avtulmus was made in the name of Chamisha Zekanim, that a suffix Erev is kosher. Fine. So now let's just make sure, remember that Rava said, when we talk about Chutzatrum, we mean 4 amas Chutzatrum. Otherwise, your personal space allows you to extend there. And then we have all of these cases, let's say a pile of stones fall on it. So what do you mean? I mean, could I lift the stones and get to it? So then why can't I? I guess, unless you say it's going according to the Rabbanan. According to the Rabbanan, I can't lift it because it's Muktzah. Okay, but then we'd have to say the Mishnah's not like Rebbe. Because according to Rebbe, if it's only an Isser Shvus, I'd be allowed to do it Beit HaShemashos, which means to kosher Erev, right? So, no, it might be talking about this is a serious landslide, and the only way to get to your Erev is to bring a bulldozer or a shovel. And that, of course, is an Isser D'Oraisa, Rebbe's motive. It's an Isser D'Oraisa. It certainly is not going to be kosher Beit HaShemashos. Now, I mean, the cases seem to be the same principle, right? I can't get to my Erev. Why do we have all of these different examples if I can't get to my Erev? So let's take the first two cases where it's the access that's a problem, not the kashrus of the presence of the Erev. Okay, so I need both, because if I would have only known the Nidgalgel, I would say, look, it's not in your Rishus. The fact that the Erev exists never is enough to make an Erev. But had it been in your Rishus, it's just underneath the pile of rocks, maybe that should be an Erev. And if it would have said the case of the pile of rocks, I would say, okay, it's out of reach. But we're just rolled out, same way it rolled out, it may roll in. And if it rolls in, that would be the same thing as the idea of the key being lost during Bein HaShemashos and then being found sometime during Shabbos. And then if it's found during Shabbos, so then it's okay. So over here, I could say, listen, you know, there's always the possibility that the wind might blow it in the other direction, right? So Zin Midati Ziku might delay this direction. Maybe that would be Erev. Gamash Malan, that is nothing that defines an Erev Bein HaShemashos, and the wind has not blown it in. Okay. Those two cases I understand. What about the cases where the Erev is there but can't be eaten? So either it's Truma and it's Tame, it's not Roy for anybody, or was literally burnt up and now I can't eat it because it's ashes. Why do I need both of those cases? Well, because the case of the Nisraf, that comes to tell me that Rabbi Yossi, who says at the end of the Mishnah, that if it's a suffix, when this took place, you are not chamer gamalt, and instead you can rely on it lakula, and a suffix Erev is kosher. I want to know that that is true, even when the Erev literally does not exist at the time that I need to define it. In other words, I'm coming along now to give a psak about something that isn't even there. And Rabbi Yossi nonetheless says, you can assume that it was there. And then Truma Venitmate is to tell me the opposite. That's to tell me that Rebbe Meir says, even though the Erev is there, and I need only decide like what its halacha was at that time, it's also considered to be L'chumra, not a kosher Erev, and therefore you would be a Chamar Gamal, so that your Suffolk would stand. So therefore we need both those cases. By the way, Rebbe Meir, you're telling me Rebbe Meir holds that we go L'chumra about issues of Tuma? And therefore, if the Truma was maybe Tameh, I have to be Machmer. Is that true? How about the case of the Mikveh, the Mishnah in Mikvos? Oh, so now we've got more issues to talk about. So we have over there a Suffolk, a guy who was Tameh. He goes into the Mikveh, but he doesn't know if he was Toivel or not. Why? Because he's not sure. Maybe he didn't put his head deep down under the water. Maybe some of his hair was sticking out. Or maybe there was a Chatzitza. He did the act of tefillah, but he isn't sure whether it was a kosher tefillah. Or even if he knows it was a kosher tefillah, but he's not really sure whether the mikveh had arba'im sa' at that point. Or if maybe there's two mikvahs in front of him. One of them is a full mikveh, one of them is a mikveh that was chaser. He knows that he was tevel, and one of them, he can't remember if it was the right-hand mikveh that did have arba'im sa' or if it was a left-hand mikveh. So it says over there like this. This is Rebbe Meir, there's the Tanakhama, that if you're talking about a tumah chamura, meaning a tumah d'oraisa, so over there we would go l'chumra. If we're talking about a tumah kala, meaning one of the yutches dvarim, let's say the guy ate oichlin tmeim, or he drank mashkin tmeim, or he was barosha v'rubo b'mayim sh'uvim, all the cases that we had back in Masechet Shabbos of the yutches dvarim, or nafla rosha v'rubo shlosha lugim mayim sh'uvim, whatever the case was, that he became tamei only mid'rabbanan, and he's not allowed to eat truma in those cases. And then he went into one of these cases. He went, he did a mikveh, he wasn't sure whether he got his hair under the water. He wasn't sure whether there was arba himsah. There were two mikvos. You can't remember which one he went into. So in that case, we say that Isafik is tahar. That's Rebbe Meir. The Tanakhama Vestam Mishnah is Rebbe Meir. So here Rebbe Meir is saying that when it comes to Rabbanan, the Suffolk is Tahar. Whereas Rabbi Yossi is Mitami. And in this Mishnah, he's saying the opposite of what he's saying here in the Suffolk to Rabbanan about the Chalos of the Erev, he should also be Mekel. Says the Gemara, well, Rebbe Meir would hold that Tchumim or Diyaraisa. If he holds Chumim D'Oraisa, so then he would view it in the same way that he viewed a Suffolk Tuma D'Oraisa, and it would be Tuma Chamura. What? Rabbi Meir doesn't hold Chumim D'Oraisa. Misav Rabbi Meir, Chumim D'Oraisa. Doesn't it say, Beferish in the Mishnah later on, that, okay, let me give you a little bit of an introduction to this idea. The question over here is, when we measure, do we include slopes or not? So in other words, you come to the Grand Canyon, okay? Now, if you have to measure the Grand Canyon, you'll say, yeah, it's only X number of amos across. Yeah, I understand. But in order to get across, I have to go all the way down, cut across and go all the way up. I mean, if I'm including the all the way up and all the way down, then the tchum ends somewhere in the middle of the wall of the Grand Canyon. So how do I measure it, right? So that is called an interesting idea. That is called either, if I'm able to get my measuring equipment, and the standard measuring equipment was a 50-amma rope chain, actually, as we'll see, if it's able to cross the obstacle, which could be a hill, and I could just go from one side to the other on the side, or hold it up, and it'll cut to the other side, I don't have to take into consideration the slope. But if it is larger than that, what do I do? So there's two very different shitas over there. Are you allowed to dig a hole, a tunnel? And this is where, of course, Musk got this whole idea of that you're able to just dig holes and go wherever it is that you want. Now, in this case, you can't really dig the hole, obviously. But what you do is you dig a virtual hole. So how do you do that? How would you measure your virtual hole? So that's called mikadrin. It's called boring a hole. And the way that you do it, we're going to see later on, is that you have two people holding the standard measuring rope at their height. One holds it at his height, and one holds it all the way down on the ground, so that what we do is we add up multiple measurements that were horizontal measurements over the vertical area. So one person moves up and he becomes the high person, and the other person moves up and he becomes now the low person, and so on, right? Okay, we'll talk about the details later. But the question is, if I come to a place, and this is a mission later on, I come to a place which is too wide for me to be mavliya, to absorb it, or to span that area within my rope. So, Bezuam Rebbe Distoyb Rebbe Yonai Mishum Rebbe Meir. Now, here it's Rebbe Meir who says, you can be Mekel and ignore the slope. Now, anybody who says that, if he would have held that Tchumim is the Oraisa, we know for a fact, as I'm about to prove to you, you cannot virtually span something. You'd have to actually measure the entire slope. Why? Because there are other places where we need to do measurements, and they have nothing to do with Tchumim of Shabbos. And where is that? Egla Rufa? Do we need to measure which city is closer? What do we do when we come to a hill, and what do we do when we come to a valley? Haha, what do you say over there? Do we need to define where an ir miklat is kolate, so that this makes an afkamino, literally a chi of misa? If the goyal adam was killed him betoch the tchum, so then it was kolate, he's chi of misa. Do we need to define what that tchum is over there? For sure, the araisa, right? So in that case, everyone agrees that you definitely do not do the virtual boring through the mountain. So you see that when you're dealing with a D'Oraisa, there is no such din as Kidur. In which case, if Rabbi Meir holds that Tchumim is D'Oraisa, he would not have allowed Kidur. Then it doesn't make sense what you're saying, that Rabbi Meir holds Tchumim is D'Oraisa. Says the Gemara, you're 100% right. However, if you look carefully, you will see that there's no contradiction in Rabbi Meir, because Rebbe Meir, in one case, is saying his own opinion, and in the other case, is quoting an opinion. So in our Mishnah, he's saying his own shita. His own shita is that Tchumim are D'Oraisa, like his Rebbe, like Rebbe Akiva. And therefore, he has to go L'chumra. In the other case, where he says that you're Mekadrin, he doesn't say Mekadrin. He says, I heard. Shamati Shemekadrin. Well, that is true. I mean, remember, however, that Rabbi Meir did not learn everything from Rabbi Akiva because he couldn't understand the shir, remember? So he left Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva. We had that before. He went to learn by Rabbi Shmuel and went back to Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so there he was quoting what he had heard from Rabbi Shmuel, and that would be that it was a derabbanan. And he was saying over, shamati, I heard such a thing. But I myself definitely don't agree. And take a look at what he said. Bezo, Omar Rebbe Distor, Rebbe Yana, Mishum Rebbe Meir, quote, Shamati Shemekadru, Shmamina. So clearly one is his own shita and one is something that he's saying over, but he doesn't hold up. Okay, if that's the case, then how do you explain Rebbe Meir's going Lakula in a case that definitely is the Arisa, where he says over there you can rely on a Chazaka to be Mekel? I mean, this is one of the richest dapim in Shas in terms of the dinim of Chazaka and Sfeikas, all brought to you courtesy of a simple issue of whether an Erev is kosher. So don't we have a contradiction in Rabbi Meir himself? Because again, we had this Mishnah in Tyrus, and it's coming up in Tyrus again, but we've had this Mishnah many times in the questions that arise through Shas in Chazaka. So it says over there in the Mishnah in Tyrus, which we'll be getting to soon, Bezrat Hashem, Naga be'achad ba'layla, somebody touches an individual at night, and he has no idea if the guy is dead or alive when he touches him. In the morning, he gets up, and he sees the guy has died. So Rabbi Meir says, look, he was alive yesterday, so it's a chazaka, and we assume he didn't die. But the chachomim are metamim because of the general rule. Kol hatimeot kisha'at betziatan. You deal with things as you find them. You don't apply a chazaka of something that was, where obviously has changed. So if Rabbi Meir is telling me I can be semech on a chazaka, even where it's a suffix in Tumas Meis, which is the Arisa, so why didn't he say the same thing over here, legabe the Truma? And why did he say in the other Mishnah, no, that the only if it's a kula, meaning if it's Tumakala, then you can be semech on the chazaka? I'm really confused. Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, it's different over here. In our Mishnah, now this sounds insane on the surface. In our Mishnah, we're talking about that there was a sheretz on the Truma during the entire Bein HaShemashos. And because of that, there's no chazaka that was tar before. It's like, well, that's ridiculous. What are you talking about? What, and Rabbi Yossi is going to say that that's considered to be a suffix? Where's the suffix? You're telling me that it was there the whole Bein HaShemashos. It's ridiculous. No, you don't understand, say Rabbi Yossi, what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying. Obviously, what is he? You think he's a nut? He's trying to tell you that the tzad of the suffix is, one of the tzadim of the suffix, is that the sheretz was there during the whole Bein HaShemashos. I mean, how is that possible? How is that one of the tzadim? I mean, either we're mesupik if the sheretz was there, we're not mesupik. Aha, there's only one explanation for that. The tzad of the suffix is created by testimony, and we have hakosha of witnesses. So assuming that in a case of hakosha of witnesses, now this is a big machlokas, what is the din? Do witnesses that are makrish each other, is edus mukheshet not considered to be testimony at all? It's thrown out and we're left with the suffix. So right now, I know that yesterday it was tahar. I know that now it's tameh because there's a sheretz on it. I have no idea what happened. And it's a standard issue of a suffix with a chazaka. Or is edus mukheshet a new suffix? The edus is definitely edus because I can't throw out edus. I just don't know which edus is true. Okay. One side of the suffix is the two edim that came along and said it was there the whole Bein HaShemashos. The other side of the suffix is the edim who say, no, we watched it, and it only fell on it after Bein HaShemashos, and therefore the Erev is kosher. That's what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying. So basically, if we're dealing with shtei kitei edim, one of them is saying it was tameh the whole time, and one of them is saying no, it became tameh only afterwards. So Rabbi Meir says that is a chazaka b'mokam edim. Nobody holds you say a chazaka b'mokam edim. Because in this case, the fact that it's edus mukheshes does not cancel out. You're trying to use your chazaka to determine against one of the set of witnesses. A chazaka does not have power to determine anything against Edom, and therefore we can't use the chazaka. In the other case, where somebody was nogea b'meitav, absolutely no idea what was going on at that moment. And so because of that, I say it was chazaka, he was alive before, and therefore we should say that he's tahor. Very simple. Rava says, what do you need to make it such a complicated case that it would be a question of chazaka b'mokam Edom? It's very simple. It's very simple. In the case where you touch the guy was alive during the day before you touched him. You know that. You know he was desperately ill. You know that in the morning he was dead. You know that you touched him in the middle of the night without measuring whether he was alive or dead. Okay. So over there you have a chazaka that the guy had been alive before. How about the other chazaka? You. What was your state before you touched this guy? And maybe even after you touched the guy, you had a chazaka that you were tahor. The guy has a chazaka that he was alive. Put the two things together, and what do you get? Two chazakas that are telling you we should not assume that anything changed. Masha Enkein, in our Mishnah, we have only one chazaka. The truma was tahor when I put it down. And Rebbe Meir says that you don't rely on a chazaka if you hold the trumim or diaraisa, because I don't take the chazaka in a mokum of a diaraisa. So there's really no problem whatsoever. Now, that's all very nice. Now I understand all of the possibilities of how to see Rebbe Meir's ostensible contradiction about whether he goes to chumra lekula. But you never mentioned the fact that Rebbe Yossi contradicts himself also. So when it came to the Mishnah in Mikvos, he said, no, you have to go to chumra. And here he says that you go lekula and that the Erev is okay. How do you explain that? Well, says Ravuna Bar Chinana, look, I understand that the only thing he was talking about over there, we're talking about even tumas that are derabbanan, we said, right? Because we said they're one of the, any of the yutches dvarim. So it was only derabbanan. And for some reason he's being machber. But you know why? Because tuma has a basis in the diaraisa. The concept of tuma and all of the various tumas are diaraisa's ideas. So because of that, he was machmer that if we're going to start being mekel on a suffix that is a derabonan, people don't know the difference. They don't think we would do that even with a suffix diaraisa where I really should have been machmer. So, okay, so then memela, they were geyser, let's be machmer also on a derabonan. Masha enke. Well, you're talking about a ruve tchumim. The whole idea is a fiction. It was created by the Rabbanan. And therefore, there's no basis for me to be worried about the fact that I should be machmer in there. So if we hold that Rabbi Yossi, he holds that the dinim of tchumim are the Rabbanan, so then everything would be okay. Wait a minute, isn't Shabbos a diraisa? And so it's sort of an extension of the dinim of Shabbos? No, because Rabbi Yossi doesn't agree with Rabbi Meir, who is the Tanakhama. He holds that Trumim is Derabbanan. And because of that, you don't view it. It's certainly not an extension of the idea of Malacha. It's not a Malacha. It's like a new concept of place. But nobody is going to say, well, since I was Mekel Agabi the dinim of Trumim, I should be Mekel on a Diraisa of Hotzah. People won't come to say that because it's obviously a different set of concerns. And it's entirely Dirabbanan. So apparently, that's how Rabbi Yossi holds. Or, you don't have to say that. It could be that Rabbi Yossi personally holds that Trumim may actually be Diraisa. And he wasn't arguing with Rabbi Meir about that. And the reason that he says legabe the din of the mikveh over there, he goes lechumra on a derabbanan, that idea is his own idea. Same thing we said about Rebbe Meir. Sometimes he said something which was his own, and sometimes he said something that was what he would be shomea from his Rebbe. And in this case, it's the opposite. The Rebbe Yossi in our Mishnah that says that a suffix Erev is kosher, if you're medayik in the Mishnah, you'll see that he's not saying it as his own. Mashenkin in the Mishnah Mikvos, it just says Rabbi Yossi, but over here it says, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Avtumus Ha'id, Mishum Chamisha Zakenim. He's not saying what he holds. He is saying what Avtumus reported, that suffix Erev kosher. We have absolutely no reason to assume that just because Rabbi Yossi said this over, that because of that he himself held that you have to be machmer. Rava Amar, Rava says, again, there's a simple way to explain it. You could say that the Mishnah over there is because the guy who went into the mikveh, wasn't he tameh before he went into the mikveh? So then, hameh tameh al cheskato, ve'ima lo taval. If the guy was tameh before, so then we have a chazaka. And therefore, he goes l'chumra. Mashenkin in our Mishnah, where we know that we have the Erev itself was kosher before. Now you want to know when it became tameh. I know that it was tar before. So hameh tameh tahor al cheskato instead of hameh tameh cheskato. Now, what about the other antithetical chazaka? I mean, can't we say that hameh mikveh al cheskato? Ve'ima lo chasar? I mean, you're telling me, I mean, you mentioned one of the issues was, I'm not sure whether the mikveh had 40 saw. Well, what do you mean you're not sure? But the mikveh once had 40 saw. It was a big mikveh, right? And now you're wondering at what point it lost its 40 saw. Before you went in or after you went in? So there too, I mean, we've got two chazakas. Why don't we put one chazaka against the other? I mean, this guy had a chazaka. He was living in town. Now you're saying, but he put up an Erev. Okay, and the Erev is a suffix, yeah, but it has a chazaka. And you're saying that's okay because that chazaka is ultimately the determining chazaka, the same thing is sure the mikveh. You're saying the guy had a chazaka before he was tameh. Okay, but he went to the mikveh. So ultimately, what defines the reality of your, whether the mikveh was good or not, right? Did the mikveh have arba'im saw? So in the same way that Rabbi Yossi is ready to change the status of the guy's mokum shvisa on Shabbos, of where his tum was, because of the chazaka in the food, why would Rabbi Yossi not be ready to change the status of the tameh because of the chazaka in the mikveh that he was tevel, and he knows he went into the mikveh? Answers the Gemara, true, absolutely true. But the Mishnah is talking about a mikveh that never was actually measured. Therefore, there was at no point that there was a definition, la'alacha. We looked at this, we measured it, and it definitely had arba'im sa'ah. It was assumed that arba'im sa'ah was a big mikveh. Now we measure and we see the water is down. Can you tell me that there was a point where it was defined, la'alacha, not that you guessed? Well, in order to be able to maintain a chazaka, remember, a chazaka is a legal technicality in which a halacha was defined at one point. Where the halacha was never defined, at least this is one of the shitas of chazaka, where the chazaka was never defined, you cannot use it as a chazaka. Remember, we had the same interesting question about whether the fact that something had lived for a year makes it into a chazaka that it's not a treifa. Because if it was a treifa, it wouldn't have lived for the year, right? But over there also, there was no particular moment at which we could define the actuality of its not being a treifa. Nobody did an x-ray of it to see whether it was actually not a treifa. There was no MRI. So where was the halacha defined that it was not a treifa? It was only at one point we take for granted that it was not a treifa because otherwise. So that's basically what's happening over here. So this is a shita in the dinim of chazaka, that a lack of a legal definition means you could never apply the idea of chazaka to it, which is amazing insight into the idea of chazaka. Okay, so because of that, Rabbi Yossi has to go to chumra when it comes to the mikveh. Mashenken over here, I know for a halachic fact that I had put down an Erev during the day, and that Erev I know was tar, it was truma, that had been carefully watched and was tar. Now it became tameh later. Okay, so I have my chazaka, and it's a perfectly good chazaka. Okay, so this brings us to the end of this rather complex daf. We're still going to be enjoying some more of these interactions. And again, this is Erevin, which starts with a lost key. And here, Erevin is the key to understanding many, many of these alternative sugyas. So I'm sorry about the lengthy presentation. We need to decide how much I'm going to rely on you and how much I'm going to try to make this understandable. But we'll talk about that, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. Maybe we should make it part of our discussion on the, most of the people have indicated that they would very much like to be part of tomorrow's semi-tainus. I call it semi-tainus is because of the Magen Avraham, that we shouldn't really make a tainus for anyone who is sensitive to fasting and may lessen his immunity during a time of a magefa. But still, it's a time in which a Tainas Tzibur is a period in which people get together and they talk about the needs of the Tzibur and what can be metukan in the Tzibur, obviously in the individuals of the Tzibur. So most people indicated they would be happy to join with that, those of you who are interested. And I certainly feel that we are at Tzibur, a very special Tzibur. We have an opportunity tomorrow to have those kind of discussions, and maybe as part of it, the amount of personal responsibility for Achrona of the Daf could be brought up as well. We can sort of up that so that even when we get to these very complex sugyas, we would still be able to move ahead. Although now we would be doing okay when it comes to learning the Mishnah. When we start getting to the Yerushalmi, it's going to be a little bit more difficult, and we're going to need to ask for more personal responsibility. Obviously, this could be a gradual process. All to be discussed. I'll send you out, Bezrat Hashem, today, a schedule to get sort of your feedback about when is a good time for us to do this, whether it's right after the daf, whether it should be sometime during the afternoon, or whether it should be dafka the way it was done in the Mishnah. It should be done before noon. Okay. We shall discuss all of that, Bezrat Hashem, in give and take.